there's plenty of people that just don't have the ability to laugh at themselves. This book is not for you if you can't laugh at yourself, right?
Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I am Nikki P. here, as always. My guest today is, we're going to go with Joseph Battaglia.
Close.
Battaglia?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, those Italians, they like to stuff that stuff in there, don't they?
It's better than Battaglia or Battaglia, though, so it's all good.
Well, why don't you start us out, tell us a little bit about who you are, where you come from.
Who I am, where I come from. Well, Italian, big surprise, I'm from New Jersey. I've worked IT for 10 plus years. I was in the Marine Corps right after high school. So I served in the Marine Corps for 8 years doing IT. And now I'm living in West Virginia. And I got out in right at the end of 2018 and then still continue to work IT. That's kind of my whole life, working in the government and working IT.
So you work in the most bureaucratic part of the most bureaucratic part of bureaucracy. That's got to be its own sort of treat. Is it something you enjoy or just something that, like, it's a normalcy that you're comfortable with?
Absolutely not. Nope. I've become very comfortable with it, and it pays, and it's a job, right? So it's just like, that's how I make money. And what I do for fun, I write. You know, I found right after getting to the Marine Corps, it's like, oh man, I got way more time than I used to. And it's just like, I always got stories going on in my head, but now it's just like, I started to put it to paper. And, you know, when I put things to paper, it doesn't make sense. But then, thank God I have my wife that fixes that. So, but yeah, it's just been my hobby that I'm trying to share with other people.
Is it like a team effort, like creating the books? Or is it, you know, 90% you, 10% her?
My most recent book, it was 90-10. My last book, which I put her as the co-author, because it really was like 50-50. And when I, like, you know, I jokingly saying like, oh, she made it make sense. I'm telling you, if anyone saw the original script, it's one of those things where I'm like 99% sure I'm dyslexic in some level. It's just, I just don't bother testing, because what does that do? So yeah, the words don't make sense. She has to make sense. And then I go over with her every single plot detail and everything and how the story goes. And she's there as, you know, the best person can have to tell me like, hey, that's really stupid. That doesn't sound good, you know? And, or, you know, I call her my lore master because she remembers everything. I have a goldfish memory. And so she like helps me make sure that my scenes don't break canon too. And you know, that starts fights sometimes, because sometimes I'm like, no, I want it in there. And, you know, it depends who's going to win on the argument of whether it's going to go in the book or not.
Yeah, but you'd rather have that fight with your wife than some other person who doesn't have, I guess, a stake in it in the same way that you guys would.
Never turns it into anything brutal or anything, right?
I mean, her vested interest is not to have an idiot for a husband, so.
Oh, well, she failed at that, so.
Or what I really mean is to not have you look like an idiot to the outside world.
There we go. Yeah, she's making sure I stay under. She's really upset I'm on the internet with YouTube now.
So you're in the Marine Corps, you and IT, and you and I have talked before this. Comedy is definitely a through line through what you do. Full disclosure, I was watching yesterday, I think, the first book trailer for the book that you put out, or the one that you're working on promoting right now. And I generally think book trailers are a waste of time and energy for authors. The thing I will say is that at least you took your book trailer and you did something that was interesting, made me want to watch it again. Like, made it something that sinks in, because it wasn't boring, and it was an engaging piece of content in and of itself. And it kind of, and I think it built up the character, or built up the persona, the, you know, elevated more, because maybe it's like you've taken like the broth and you've like boiled it down, so now you've got a nice gravy. of who you are, I guess.
Right. I mean, like when I'm like thinking about like advertising myself, right? I can't be deadpan or something like that, or not deadpan. I want to avoid cringy, right? But like, how do you do cringy with my pure own humor? And I feel like the best way to do is go into character that's just a little bit you, more hyper, you know, you but extra, right? This character that I kind of went through, though, it's like, it's kind of like the guilt of what you feel like, you know, shilling yourself, right? Like, I feel like when I shill myself, it feels pretentious. I'm sure many people do that. So I'm like, okay, let me go as pretentious as possible. So it's like in the commercial, I'm wearing a turtleneck, a beret. I literally Googled what's the most pretentious outfit you could wear, and that's how I came up with it.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, and it absolutely comes across as like, oh my God, this guy's trying to be the most douchey. Like, it's the 1950s coffee house look.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like the music. I Googled and I'm like, or, you know, I went through a bunch of different songs. And I'm talking to my wife and I'm like, I just need a song that makes it look like I smell my own farts.
Well, it's funny talking to you about this because, like, so I come from music and I'm an introvert. So being on stage in front of people is not naturally a comfortable place. And so part of getting around that is designing a personality that can kind of take the slings and arrows. And so it's like, you're going out here being, you know, artfully pretentious. For me, my thing was like, I was always trying to be like the pushy asshole, but in like a sort of lovable way. Like, and I literally had a conversation where like some girl asked for like, we'll just say it was one of the most normie songs you could ever ask for. Like I'm up on stage playing, you know, whatever. And she's just asking for Fleetwood Mac All Night. And I was like, looking at her like, ma'am, do you have a pumpkin spice latte hidden somewhere? Like, where are your Ugg boots? Like, come on. Just, you know, purposely being antagonistic with the crowd, you know, developing that. And it's not that that's not me. I'm very acerbic. Like, that is the kind of person I am. But like, I wouldn't usually go out in public and just start harassing people. But like, when you get this place, it's like, it's maybe the sarcasm that lets that character kind of take away from you. It's like, no, that's that guy. He does the bullshit. I'm just over here, you know, working like the little puppet master position kind of.
Yeah. And like, you know, my own comedy with conversation with people, like I'll do that. Like, yeah, I'm like the best thing ever, but it's like people know I'm kidding. So I turned up that character like a little bit more.
Why don't you tell us, I guess, a little bit about specifically the book that you're hawking right now?
Tale of the Dunce Whisperer.
This is very different, it feels like, than what you've done in the past.
Yeah, so in the past, this was sci-fi, grimdark. Now we got comedy, fantasy. And for people who need to see, this is what I look like in the trailer. And so I was like, yeah, I'm going to post myself as big as possible on the back of the book. And also, it's again, I mean, I could have put this all over the book.
Out of curiosity, have you ever read it, like, or have you ever watched or read any of Matt Holness's, Garth Marenghi's Dark Place stuff?
No, I have not.
You'll appreciate that. Like, Matt Holness genuinely seems kind of like a quiet guy, created this. Basically, it's like the most self-absorbed version of Stephen King in the 80s as a persona called Garth Marenghi. And like when he's written two books and they're like all fourth wall breaking, like where literally he's just talking about how amazing his ideas are and like how great an author he is and interjecting that into the writing itself.
Right. Yeah. No, it's very similar. Yeah.
It's like, I have a feeling I'm going to love this book because it reminds me so much of just that. And is it different, I guess, writing something where you do get to interject, you know, the joke is as important as perhaps the storyline itself. Is that a different kind of mindset writing that versus doing like a grim, dark, you know, science fiction book?
Oh, I mean, the writing process for this is definitely different. But it was very important that the story was just as good as the comedy. I made sure of that. And writing a sci-fi, there's a lot more research being done, a lot more Google searches that are put me on, you know, a lot of lists.
Well, you don't want to have fires in space.
Right. Yeah. You want to avoid that. You want to don't be lazy when you're researching, or don't be lazy when you're writing and not research it. Google is right there. It's very easy to use. But yeah, no, this is this was just tracking back to a lot of like previous experiences and then like changing that experience that I had with a customer or something like that, and then changing it into like a fantasy setting allegory kind of situation. And that's why I say it's like, it's going to be very cathartic, because like, is it going to be different than that person's experience? Probably, but this main character is going to run into characters that you're going to completely recognize as somebody in your, you know, in your past or something. Yeah.
Well, we were talking earlier about like the IT crowd, and everybody knows one of those guys in that show, or everybody knows like an experience that one of those guys has had, because people are people on average, you know?
Yeah, IT crowd's great. I just wish they went a little bit more with the IT jokes, though. You know, the internet episode was the best.
So was it Big Ben? Were the internetties?
Oh, yeah, they keep the little box. I have a t-shirt with that, actually, with the internet.
A little 5x6 box where the internet lives at Big Ben. It was one blinking light, I think.
Stephen Hawking himself gave us permission.
What is the premise behind this book? Like, in the trailer, you describe it as Harry Potter meets Office Space.
Yeah, so it's basically, I was like, what if the fantasy kingdom was like a cubicle 9-to-5 bureaucratic PowerPoint type of job? Like, what would that look like? And how would the comedy, or how would the interactions and everything be like kind of different in the fantasy setting?
Well, and the other thing that like reading up about it was, it's kind of got this place where it's confusing magic and science in some way. Like, they both apparently exist simultaneously, it sounds like.
I mean, it's definitely more fantasy. Like, I got my power systems in there, but it's like, no, everything's a magical tool, or not everything, but like, everybody has to work with a magical tool in some way for like basic work, or you know, self-defense or something like that. So he's the guy who repairs that stuff.
And when you say magical tools, is it like making sure that your rod of blasting always does the blasting? It doesn't accidentally turn people into frogs or something like that.
Yeah, something like that, right? But it doesn't always have to be a weapon. It can be like a loom, right? That like makes clothes, right?
Well, no, I figured. I'm trying to relate this to like a D&D mindset, you know, like something that'd be kind of like obvious or like.
One of the first things that happens is you got a customer comes in. He's like one of the guards, and he's got a fire wand. And every time he fires it, he's feeling like hot when he fires it, and like he's talking to one of the side character main like bigger, who's kind of like more naive character in this, and he just like he's complaining to the main character like, I don't get it, like it's working exactly how it is, I keep telling him it's working how it is, that it's just, he's just feeling hot. And he's like, no, I know I'm supposed to get hot, but like it's getting, I'm getting way hotter than I should be, I know my tool. And then so what the main character's like, I got it, right? He takes it, he like demagifies it. I call it illumination, so it's deluminized, so it's weaker, and he goes and he tests it, and he's like, oh, this is perfect, and now it's I'm not getting so hot. So, and then he takes off, he's like, thanks, you know, you were actually helpful. And Brever's like, what the hell, you didn't actually fix it. And he's like, yeah, I know. Maybe next time when he realizes it's still doing the same thing, he won't come here, or maybe he won't come to me, so it won't be my problem.
When you're crafting a book like this, one of the things I always focus on is audience. You strike me as someone who's definitely done the research, or at the very least has a very specific type of audience in mind for your book. Like, is that fair to say? Like, you know who the people you think are going to want to read this are?
Well, yeah, I didn't really do the research on it, but it's like, yeah, this is, you know, IT allegory, right? So it's like, dude, if you worked IT and you even have a hint of liking fantasy, like, pick this book up. Like, there's no reason for you not to pick this up. You're probably going to get more enjoyment out of this than any other book. But it's also, it's, you know, all the stuff that they're fixing, it's like, yeah, you'll get like a little extra sense of like ability if you have IT. Like, there's a chapter about blaming it on the distant end, if you catch my drift. But it's very like customer service. So like, if you were a waiter, like we're going to be dealing with a very similar types of customers. So like, it's that for the broader audience that's going to be attracted to this book, it's anyone who's worked customer service.
Obviously, that stems from your background. Is there anybody who you think won't like this book?
If you hate comedy, right? Like, no, I mean, I'm sure. You know, people don't like a lot of things. I mean, I'm sure, like, I mean, there's plenty of people that don't want to read comedy. Like, they need the actual visual representation of it. But, I mean, this is more of an all ages, but, like I'll say, like, 13 up, like, it's going to be completely fine to read this. They'll find humor in it. But you kind of are probably going to need some level of work experience to get, like, the deeper meaning of some of the jokes. So, if you're not 18, or, you know, some people are before 18, but, like, yeah, that younger audience probably might not resonate with the book, but there's still going to be things they'll enjoy in it.
Yeah. Now, how do you feel? Like, one of the things that we brought up talking before is that I'm a big fan of reader trust and building an honest representation of yourself, or building an honest, you know, at least building an honest relationship with your audience. Now, when you're working in comedy, and certainly, like, when you're kind of developing a character as the author, do you feel like you're shortchanging that part of the audience-author relationship? Or do you feel like you're maybe enhancing it in some ways by, you know, giving it, like, kind of paring off some of, like, the unnecessary human baggage and just giving it, like, the very particular, condensed, concise version of that person?
I don't know, would a person be, like, turned off by, like, a customer reflected badly and they kind of are fitting that customer?
Well, no, I guess, so when you go out there and you're trying to promote a book, one of the things I think is important actually selling books is that the reader or potential audience and you have an understanding of each other, and you kind of, you're developing that relationship because that's what's going to keep people around. Like, you put two Cthulhu-themed books next to each other, the thing that's going to make me pick one over the other is going to be the guy on the back cover. Now, when you choose to kind of go with more of a less subtle, less organic person, you plus more isn't exactly you. Do you feel like that makes it more difficult to build that relationship with the audience?
Well, so I think I have some safeguards. So, a big thing is, like, if you can't laugh at, like, there's plenty of people that just don't have the ability to laugh at themselves. This book is not for you if you can't laugh at yourself, right? Like, most people don't enjoy stand-up, right? Comedy. But it's just, like, it's kind of, like, the character that I'm using to, like, advertise this and everything is just, like, it's just kind of, you have to have self-awareness. And, like, my big, like, lesson in this is just, like, so it's the Dunce Whisperer, right? He's able to interpret what the stupid people with their stupid problems are doing. But the reason he's able to do that is because he himself is also stupid. He just has a self-awareness that he's stupid. So it gives him a leg up and he's able to fix people's problems because he's able to put himself in everyone's shoes. And it's one of these things, it's just like, nobody is as smart as they think they are, right? And it's like one of those things, it's like, oh, don't worry, you'll learn on the job, right? Like, at almost every single job in the whole world, you're going to learn on the job, right? Like, that's how it goes for most people. It is just like, even like the people that you probably think are the smartest people ever, right? Let's just take doctors, for example, right? There's plenty of doctors out there that, like, God, if you had a conversation with them or knew certain things about, you're like, I should have, you know, thought a second time before having surgery with this guy. But, you know, you don't know that stuff, right? And it's just kind of, it's probably ignorance is bliss. And they are professionals, but.
I would say, given the last 3 years of Twitter, I have a very different opinion of doctors and their general level of intelligence. So,
because they weren't as smart as people thought they were, right? It's you got to understand everybody's dumb.
they turned out to be people, not something different. Well, one of the reasons I asked that question is it's like sometimes as an author, you know, you feel like you're carrying around baggage, especially like in the highly charged political world that we have now. You know, you carry your voting record with you, so to speak. So is it a little freeing to kind of get away from that where that shit kind of isn't as important? Like this more of a characterized version of the author allows you to kind of strip away some of the stuff you don't want to have to deal with?
Yeah, but it's like part of the, if you see me on YouTube, it's like, it's very much, you know, kind of offensive, right? I have I always have my background of me in a short bus, right? And it's just like I amplify the whole stupid thing, right? And that, I mean, that all goes into the reason I came up with the character and everything is part of my like my backstory, right? But it's like, you know, if I say, you know, something a little bit off color or whatever, which I definitely tend to, it's like people are going to get offended. It's like, okay, well, like I'm just not going to not offend the whole world, right? And
You saw the picture in the short bus guy, right? You knew what you were getting into. You signed up for this.
Exactly. So, like, if you look at that and you're like, that's not a guy I want to deal with, it's like, it's okay. I'm sorry that that's the case, but just not going to be able to win over everyone. So,
and maybe that's why I think why I focus so much on, like, getting the good author, you know, developing your author's story, your persona, your personality, because there's a certain amount of that does do the heavy lifting of, well, you understood what you were getting into. You read the back sleeve. Like you read the kind of character that I am. It should help you understand how I'm going to write. Whereas and that's what separates your writing from that other guy who's writing about the same exact thing. You know, you're not Brandon Sanderson. You're not going to write the same story he does. Well, obviously.
Obviously, it's apparent.
Self-evident as far as the book trailer was concerned.
Exactly.
And so it's like, the reason I harp on this, and I appreciate that you actually have done the hard work of thinking about it, is because when I listen to far too many writers talk about their books now, it's like they spend so much time talking about like their brilliant story. And it's like, it's a fantasy book. Like I kind of get what a fantasy book's about. I mean, what do I get out of Brandon Sanderson? He's the guy that wrote the Wheels of Time books after Jordan. And then he wrote some more of his own fantasy series. You know, like, what's the difference between those two things? Well,
yeah, how many people live in America? And then how many millions of people write books? And it's just like, look, there's a million masterpieces out there. There's a million turds out there. How do we filter that? Because it'll take, like, you know, what, 50,000 words to kind of get an idea if the book is going to be trash or not. And, you know, that's a lot of time. It's a lot of investment. So what other ways do people have to filter whether they might like it or not? Well, it's the author, right? Well, and it used to be the publisher is, you know, that used to be the whole point of the publisher, to market and filter out the supposed trash and whatnot. So people just go to the one publisher. That's not really an option now. They're not doing that even anyways.
Well, certainly not for one of you dangly bits people. They're definitely not doing it for you. Well, there's a lot of things that they used to do. Some of that was, you know, help you with marketing and help you with building the audience. And they're not going to do any of that either today. Like, so.
No. Well, they're going to pick the person who already has the built-in audience. There's how many millions of YouTubers that already have over 100,000 followers? It's like, okay, let's go with one of them. Are they a better writer than the rando? Maybe. I don't care. Built-in audience.
Do you have any plans as to where you're headed after this book? Do you think you're going to kind of keep things in the same kind of direction? Are you building like a franchise off of this particular book, or you're kind of playing it by ear?
That wasn't the plan, but then, like, well, after I finished it, I was like, oh, I came up with the perfect sequel. Because, like, what's the perfect antagonist to go against somebody whose superpower is being aware that they're stupid? Well, do you know anything about Warhammer 40K orcs?
A little bit about it.
Well, they get their power from being, like, stupid, right? If they paint things yellow, they go faster. So it's just like, but the reason that is because they believe it. It's like the power of the wog, right? So it's like the more dumb they are, the more technically powerful they could be, right? So how does the Dunce Whisperer go up against that? So that's my sequel plan for that. But I also, I'm currently writing the sequel for my first sci-fi book. And I've also have, and I kind of intend this from the beginning, I have plotted out already a book series for a fantasy thing that's not a comedy, but it's in the same world and in the past of this book.
Well, yeah. Well, as you say, like, certainly, as you said, you built so much of the book off of, like, lived experience, just kind of transferred it into this book. It's like, well, I mean, as long as you continue working in IT, you're going to have more and more stupid experiences to draw off of. So it should make for pretty much an endless, like, supply of dumb.
Well, yeah, I didn't even, like, come close to tapping into, like, all my dumb experiences and, you know, just the military. But yeah, it was like, while I was writing this, there was a few times I'm like, I got a new chapter planned. Yep, this customer just became a character. All right.
You also have the fact that you are a YouTuber to help build an audience. What are some of the things that you would actually recommend to aspiring authors out there for ways to kind of build an audience? Do you think it's necessary to become some type of influencer with some type of channel out there? Or do you think, you know, that's just a way of many to do it?
It's definitely a way of many to do it, but it's like, I don't know. It feels like you need some sort of social media presence in some way in order to get a following or to get people to back you. And if not, you're going to have to know somebody that's willing to support you that does have an audience or of some kind. But yeah, I'm like slowly building an audience. I have a very small audience on YouTube, but like I've got a few videos that got some decent views on it. But, you know, I focus my channel to kind of be a particular genre where it's just, you know, storytelling, but with like my character of where I'm just, you know, in my short bus calling people stupid, you know, while riding short bus. Yeah.
I guess it's about that time. Where can we send people that want to learn more about you, learn more about your book?
Right. Okay. So you can follow me on Twitter at, I'm just at Batsauce, BATTSAUCE. And yeah, I got my trailer there. I'm going to post updates and whatnot. And you can find me on YouTube. Channel name is Batsauce. And yeah, those are the two places you can find me. Otherwise, I'm on The Iron Seas, which is a show I co-host with some buddies, and where we, again, talk about story writing, but we, you know, usually put on a movie and fight about it. And yeah, we don't agree a lot, and it's fun.
Yeah, you definitely don't agree with me very often. I see the votes like, God, you guys love some stupid movies. And then there's some really great stupid movies that you don't like at all.
What, you don't think Juniper Ascending is a great movie? Or After Earth?
Really, really, what gets me was all of the hatred for Ernest P. Worrell.
Ernest, that was a great stream we did then. Yeah, I don't like Ernest, but apparently there's a lot of people that like Ernest.
If you know the really entertaining thing about Ernest is that, like, that's a character that guy created that blew up.
Yeah, it was just from commercials.
Yeah,
apparently it's just a really old commercials,
and people loved that character so much that he managed to play it for 30 years.
Yeah, it's insane. Hopefully, hey, I'm going to try to follow in the Ernest footsteps, all right? Like, there's not much difference between our characters, right?
I mean, there's a certain charm that comes with being, like, lovably stupid.
He's more like the you know, the blue collar. I'm more like the white collar version.
Yeah. Hey, everybody needs their stupid anti-hero.
Right, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on here, Joseph. Everybody, go where he told you to go. Enjoy him. I was excited to actually have you on the episode because we've talked a few times, but your schedule is sometimes more difficult to work with than others. So I was glad we finally got to make it happen.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here, man.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to .com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.